Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
What's going on, America? I'm Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid, lifelong hunter. And you're about to experience the Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth, airing live on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm here with my two co-hosts, Jesse Riley. How you doing, Jesse?
Hey, how you doing, Chad?
I'm doing great. Now that my terrible Memorial Day weekend is over, that my wife destroyed, but that's for another show.
That's the other show.
I still love her because that's the kind of guy I am. And my good friend, great American, texted me all weekend with patriotic text. Chris Jesualdi, what's up, Chef?
How are you, Chad?
You got the glasses on. I still can't get used to that. He wears Ray-Bans in studio. I love it. So if you're following me on Twitter, thank you very much, by the way, and I guess I have to apologize for being a numbskull. I woke up this morning. Well, first of all, I did a lot of research last night on rabbit hunting, and which I know a fair amount about, but you know, I wanted to make sure I got my facts straight. And did about 2 hours of research, wrote up a whole show. Met my two co-hosts at the subway station. I said, all right, rabbit. And they both looked at me and said, no, you said trout.
Trout.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember. You give me a long weekend and it's over. Forget it. I'm done. Reset. Everything's got to read. And it's your fault, both of you.
Obviously.
Yeah. How about a text? Yeah. You'd send me pictures of flags, your beautiful patriotic daughters all weekend, Chef. You couldn't mention, hey, don't forget, we're talking about fly fishing, trout. You couldn't do that for me. You like to hurt me.
I could have, Chef.
You're like my wife. You like to hurt me.
I failed.
But guess what? No, it's all right. I still love you because that's what I do.
Because he's a nice guy.
He is a nice guy. He's
a great guy. I'll become the coffee boy at the radio station.
And I know this pains you when people pass the buck. Oh, you're going to go there.
Look, that's right,
Jack just turned around
us, right?
And gave you a glaring, dirty look. Like, yeah, that's not funny. So
I'll take back my contribution.
But there is some new guy. What's the new guy's name? I forget the new guy already.
Our new engineer is Dedrick.
Dedrick, welcome aboard.
How's it going, guys?
I'm surprised Chef Chris didn't send you out on a coffee run already. Oh, Dedrick, welcome. So listen, if he wants coffee, tell him to get off his ass, okay? But here we are, and we're going to talk trout.
Trout.
Which is appropriate, and I should have thought about it because it is trout fishing season.
Right, it's trout season right now, right?
Yeah, man. Everyone's out. I've already been out with the kids. We did okay. Few brook trout, we've already consumed them. They were delicious, and pan fried them, a little butter, a little garlic, you know the deal. For me, some parsley, lots of lemon juice. I know it's
so we jumped ahead to the recipe.
No, we're going to get into it because the history of trout fishing, fly fishing in general, where it really all started, mm-hmm. is pretty amazing. You know, and the art of fly fishing doesn't obviously just apply to trout. I mean, that's where we're going to kind of tie.
Well, it's like mostly river fish?
Right. Well, right. Mostly, yeah. But then they do saltwater fly fishing, you know, stripers, mm-hmm. things like that. I'm not a big saltwater fisherman, so I don't know that much about it. But it transcends all areas of fishing where you could go fly fishing. My father has done a fair amount of saltwater fly fishing. He's always trying to get me into it. Growing up, my father always took us trout fishing. You know, that's how I got into it.
Right.
But for us young, when we were younger, you know, it wasn't fly fishing. He was a fly fisherman, but he would take us with the rods and you know, with our fishing poles, and we'd go out and, you know, worms, bread, salmon eggs, the whole thing, and we just pull in stringers full of trout. You know, I have that great picture I was telling you about. I was probably like 10 years old, and we're all in the picture, but there is a stringer of trout from tree to tree, probably 40 trout. You know, not one of them under 12 inches.
You think it's like the ability to catch so many trout, and I know we're taking a bit of a diversion here, but is that why, like, you see a lot of smoked trout? Because if you have that much fresh fish, you have to find something.
Yeah, I mean,
to, you know, to do with it that still respects the fish.
But yeah, and I think that goes back to sustainable, you know, and living off the land, sustainable practices where these people, you see, you could see it today in these remote areas of Alaska. Watch any of the programs. National Geographic has a couple of shows, right? These people living above the Arctic line. And they're, when those fish come into season, man, they better start netting them, trapping them, fishing them. And they build smoke houses. They smoke all the salmon. You know, they're living off this fish. And, you know, obviously Native Americans did it. More primitive cultures all had to find ways of preserving not just trout, but all meats in general.
Right, all meats that are...
Yeah. And so that plays today, but there's nothing more delicious than a perfectly smoked trout, you know, the flakiness of it, the tenderness, that smoky flavor that comes through. But, you know, in my research of it, there's so many avenues you could go as far as the history of fly fishing because, you know, a lot of it, depending on the area of the world, kind of paralleled itself. You know, as advancements happened in fishing, you know, where they figured out, hey, we could use a bone for a hook. And
right.
And the barbed hook came about. And, you know, prior to that, they were using wood hooks, carving their own hooks, basically, for fish. And then this idea that we could attach feathers.
It's a whole art form.
Oh, yeah.
To build a fly.
Right. And this started, you know, and we're talking about 200 AD. There's mosaics in southern Europe of Romans on the rivers, fly fishing effectively. You know, they had these, they had flexible in the mosaics. You could see, you know, a bent pole. So they were using flexible wood materials to build rods. They were fastening various feathers based on, you know, the season or to try to mimic.
It's really all about observation.
Absolutely.
That's like what are these fish like jumping out of the water to eat? And then people who want to fish them in ancient times saying, okay, look, can I make this thing and attract the fish in the same way?
That's exactly how it happened. And today you look at a fly fisherman and he knows his seasons, you know, in March, what fly is going to work on this certain river or this area of the country, you know, June, you know, throughout the summer into August, you're going to be changing your flies. And somebody said, my father sat at the table tying his, he had his fly tying kit and he would try to mimic, you know, the flies, the real flies, I guess they're called, that you would see out on the river. And he would try to mimic them with his collection of feathers and materials as he was tying his own flies. It's really an amazing history to see the transformation of the sport. But truthfully, when you look at it, not that much has changed from 200 AD,
right.
You know, the first recorded fly fishermen. Not much has changed. They're still using flexible rods. This idea that we could, you know, tie our own flies and catch massive amount of fish is a great story. You know, some other interesting things that happened along the way. You know, this idea, and if you're a fly fisherman, and we won't get into it too much, but, you know, wet flies.
Yeah, what is the difference between a wet and a dry fly?
So the idea is with dry flies, if you look at the history, where are my notes? I want to make sure I get this right. Dry flies. So we're talking about, you know, a later invention. This is now 19th century. This idea that we could use things like mallard feathers, you know,
right.
Duck feathers, things like this, things that are going to kind of stay on the surface and float a little better,
right.
Just to mimic different movements within the river to kind of mimic the natural surroundings
right.
again, you know, because every time I went, not again, I wasn't, you know, growing up, my father would go all the time. We grew up on Long Island, Connecticut River State Park, and this place was famous for its fly fishing. And he would go up the Delaware River, Hancock
area. So you don't really need to travel that far away to fly fish.
No, it's a local sport. And the Northeast is you know, one of the hotbeds of fly fishing. You know, the Adirondack Mountains to Long Island, really. But Connecticut River State Park, you know, state park run, beautiful network of rivers. And these guys would line up and wait to get into the park, and they would have certain areas. My father would line up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go fishing with his buddy, and they would go out there, and they would time it. I think there was like 4 to 6 hour blocks you could go out for, and he'd come home with a basket full of trout. And to him, it was never about the trout, you know, or believe me, we ate it. And it was delicious, and to this day, I love trout, and I can't wait to hear some of your recipes. But, you know, it was about, for my father, I know, because today he still tells me, you know, you got to get out there. It's And I told him, well, now Connecticut River State Park is catch and release. And for me, as a guy who wants to eat food, you know, catch it and eat it, I don't get that. And he was like, who cares? Get out there. It's just about being in that surrounding. You know, you're in the middle of Long Island, suburbia, basically. But you get into the middle of this state park, and you might as well be in the middle of the Adirondack Mountains.
Well, let me ask you, there's this thing I was reading, right? Because they're like seasons overlap when you fish, right? So you can fish right now for trout, but there's this overlap period where you cannot pick up striped bass.
Right, which... So where we're talking about hunting, where we're talking about fishing, it doesn't really apply anyhow. You're talking on the tidal waters or the breakwaters where you're going to find those stripers coming in. Some of those guys, you know, we had a place at the end of Connecticut River State Park. The river opened up into a place called Bubbles Falls. And guys would fish stripers there during the season and everything. And there was a lot of trout fishermen there, too. You know, different equipment, different way of thinking. But to my father, it was always the most important thing was, you know, and I'm not even sure my father was a brilliant man. I'm not sure he really appreciated or understood the history of fly fishing as much to realize that he was doing, maybe he did. He had a lot of respect for the sport, or he has a lot of respect. I'm talking like he's not with us. He's, hey, Dad, he's still
with us. Is he listening to the show?
Probably not. He's... The internet thing, he's like, what? You got a stupid show? I don't know. What's it on? The internet? I don't get it. Wait, call me when I put on a radio station and get it. And I'm like, all right, Dad, don't worry about it. But, you know, he would respect the time of season, when to go out fishing for these. And to him, you know, it was just about that serenity almost that came from being alone out there. And he always dragged me a couple of times, you know, but it was always like, and he loved to spend time. He loved to spend time with me and teach me and stuff. But it was like, okay, quick lesson. Here's what you got to do. Get down the river. You'll be fishing over there. I'll be up here. You know, it's not like, you know, a bunch of guys on a party boat drinking beer and hanging out. It's a solitary undertaking. It's almost spiritual in a lot of ways. I'm not trying to sell the sport as much as, you know, you got to get out there and experience it. It doesn't even, you know, my point is it doesn't matter if you catch anything or not. Catching is great, and we're going to talk about you guys. I'm going to put you on the spot and talk about preparation. Because, again, and they were both laughing at me, okay, both of them.
Both of us?
Yeah, both of you guys. When I said, to me, I just like throwing them in a cast iron pan, you know, gutting them out, throwing them in a pan, little olive oil, chef, olive oil.
Yeah, no more canola.
No more canola.
No more canola.
Some nice, nice, rich olive oil, a little bit of butter, some garlic, parsley, a lot of salt. Squeeze the lemon juice in there at the end. That's all I need. Some rice.
Well, when you think about it, right? If you're out somewhere, right? You go to the state park near your house. You're not that far from home to get those fish back home.
Right.
But if you're like upstate New York, right? Yeah. You have to properly ice those fish if you're going to take the ride back to New York City.
Yeah, well, we used to do it all the time. No, that's easy enough.
Right, but to me, it's like if I'm out there, I want to eat the fish right there.
The situations I've been in where that was the case was the best. You know, that was the best. You catch the fish. There were times we'd be camping, and we'd camp right on the Delaware. I mean, and we'd go fishing and pull in a stringer full of trout. And then prepare it right there as we're camping. Nice cold beer.
And they're nice small fish, too.
Yeah, delicious. Delicious fish. All right. Guess what? I want to talk about our fundraiser. It's 15 minutes already.
Already.
I didn't get to anything. I was going to go into the whole history of Macedonia, the whole... Jack, we got to talk to the people in charge and get us like a two-hour show. Something like that. Two to 4 hours, I think, would work for us. No, I want to be serious for a second, though, and talk about our membership drive.
Right.
The membership drive's ongoing. This is an unbelievable station. You have to help us out. You got to become a member. If you like our programming, if you're listening to the programming, get involved. Help us out. There's different memberships. Chef Chris
was kind enough to get me a membership.
So you're a member. Chef Chris is a member. They're like gold members or something. They're unbelievable with the support we get. So try to help us out here.
So we'll get the little stickers in the mail with our address on them. It's like a little gift sooner or later.
Something like that, yeah. And then you'll put them, and you could really use them instead of like when the ASCP sends you stuff and you use it and you're not even a member. Let's take a short break here, and we'll be right back with the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Cruise.
Right now you're listening to Top Gun by Tom Cruise on the Wild Game Domain, and this is HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Brought to you by Susty Party, an online party supply store.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef. Pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Hey, welcome back to the Wild Game Domain. I'm here with my co-hosts, Chris Gesualdi and Jesse Riley, and we're talking trout fishing. And before the show, we were talking how we always kind of get into it and the subject matter, and then the last 5 minutes, I'm like, all right, quickly.
Yeah, time runs away.
Yeah, let's do some preparations, and I promised both of these guys that I was going to put them on the spot today, and I want to hear some of their ideas for preparation of trout. Like I said, for me, just pan fry the thing and eat it.
Well, they're a different trout, right? Because there's the brown trout and the brook trout, which are and right. rainbow are kind of smaller fish, right?
Right, right.
And then the lake trout's considerably larger.
Lake trout's are bigger. For me, growing up, a lot of rainbows and lake trout's because we fished a lot. My father again with the fly fishing on the rivers and stuff. Mm-hmm. For me, it was a lot of lake fishing, so a lot of the rainbows and a lot of the lake trout's. Delicious, big trout, good eating. For me, I never noticed, when we're eating a somewhat smaller trout, the difference. Truthfully, for me, again, and maybe it's all that garlic and butter and parsley and lemon juice, I smear it all over it. If you blindfolded me, I don't know if I would know the difference between eating a, rainbow and a brook trout. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could discern the difference. But that's why I want to hear, you know, your ideas for,
well,
for some
preparation. I mean, there's like that really classic, right, trout almondine.
Yeah, with the with the brown butter and the parsley. There's a million variations with the brown butter.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the most classical one, and the one of the most delicious is smoked horseradish, mustard, and stuff like that.
So talk to me about smoking, because I truthfully, my father, again, giving him a lot of credit, you smoke trout, and I never got involved in that. He had a Cabela's smoker in our garage, and he would go in there, put whole trout in there, and smoke whole trout. But talk to me a little bit about it. What's the science of it? How's it happen? How's it work? How easy is it? How can you do it? Do you need a smoker? I know in a lot of restaurants, I saw guys smoking fish without smokers.
Well, first you got to ask yourself, what is a smoker? A smoker is an oven with smoke.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All you need is a box, something to elevate it, and a lid.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And a fire.
Right. So I saw people doing it with what we call hotel pans, food trays.
Yeah, you
want to piss your wife off, do that tomorrow in the house.
Yeah. That's why my father was in the garage doing it.
No, it's simple to smoke the trout. Normally the trout is, you know, they can be whole with the bone in, but a lot of times they're butterflied.
Mm-hmm.
They're boned from the inside out.
Which is something I've never done. Is that easy enough?
Yeah, you just start from the inside instead of from the backside.
Mm-hmm.
Just follow the bone.
Just follow the bone all the way. The spine we're talking about.
Right.
And along the rib cage of the fish.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Comes right out. Just put them in a simple brine. We've talked about brine before.
Right.
Water, salt, sugar.
Mm-hmm.
You could throw spices in there. You only have to brine it for, you know, half an hour.
And now when you smoke, I know you have to do this with like pork and other things. After you brine it, you have to like dry it off and let it get like a little skin on it.
Yeah, they call that the pellicle formation.
Pellicle formation.
And what does that do?
Just helps the smoke stick longer.
Right.
Stick, you know, picks up more of the smoky flavor.
So it just gives a little body to the fish, gives some firmness.
But normally something little like the trout, it's just patted dry.
Mm-hmm.
And then right into your smoker.
Yeah, you could do it like on a hibachi. You could do it on a grill. It only takes like 10 minutes, 15 minutes at the most.
Right, so you have to have a way to contain the smoke. Right, so it stays around the food item.
Yeah.
So and it's important to pick the kind of wood, right?
I like fruit, apple, mm-hmm. cherry, stuff like that. Pecan I can deal with.
Just based on the flavor profile that's going to come from this smoke produced
and
by
everybody, like when we smoke, they're always like, well, how do I know it's done? It's just like anything else. It just has a little smoke on it.
Mm-hmm.
Touch it, use your thermometer. But yeah, it's moist, flaky, and delicious.
Yeah, one of the hotels I used to work in over the years, they had a Swedish guy, the chef, and he would just smoke all the salmon. He would do, you know, all the smoked salmon for breakfast.
He'd just do it like in a hotel pan?
Yeah, two hotel pans, mm-hmm. Three hotel pans, the way I remember it. He would have the, you know,
the perforated pan in the middle.
Right. Yeah. And he'd put the fish out on it, and he'd start the fire underneath with the wood. And the way I remember it, it was like just wrapped up in aluminum foil, and it mm-hmm. was on top of the ovens. And he would watch it and check in. In a couple hours, we had beautiful smoked salmon.
See, that's a different kind of smoke. That's supposed to be like cold smoke.
Okay.
Because you don't really want to change the texture of the fish.
Right.
It should slice like a lox.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. That's what he did. All right, so that's cold smoke, just lower temperature.
Yeah, that's 60 degrees and below.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, when you're, would it be called hot smoking?
Absolutely, hot smoking.
And what temperature are we at there?
Usually it's 100 and above.
100 and above. Okay. And that's obviously quicker.
Yeah, it's quicker, but again, it's...
You're going to change the texture.
One is like lox, and the other one is like pan-seared or roasted,
right.
just with some smoky flavor on it.
Okay. So catch the fish, smoke them yourself. There you go, from Chef Chris Gesualdi. Mm-hmm. Very easy.
But trout is like, it's very versatile. I think it's underused.
Mm-hmm.
It's super, you know, you get it from the Catskills and stuff like that. Super fresh. I like it grilled, breaded.
Talk to me about grilling. I've always had trouble. I tried to grill whole trout.
Yeah.
I've always had some trouble with it, skin sticking, and I've tried everything. I know the oil, the grates, get the grill nice and hot. You get a little trouble. Is there any trouble, you know, like, you know, I see guys wrapping them up in aluminum foil, putting everything in it. To me, that's not grilling, though.
No, if it's not directly on the grill, it's
right,
not
grilling. Right. What's the point? I could do that in my oven. Any tips, you know, going on to the grill?
Well, you want to make sure your grill is hot.
Right.
You want to make sure your grill is lightly oiled or lubricated and it's clean.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. And what's very, very important is that your protein or whatever you're going to grill is dry. It can't be covered with oil or wine or marinades or just wet.
Right. See, so my other thing
is, dry it off really good.
I'm not good with the fish on the grill because I don't know when to flip it. You know, give me a nice steak, give me a pork chop, give me something like that. I'm good. I could be patient with the fish. I feel like I try to grab it too early maybe and get it flipped.
Sometimes you got to finish it in the oven too.
Mm-hmm.
You can't always it on the grill.
So get it real hot so you're applying this really intense heat. Just get it kind of seared in a way on the grill.
Well, if it's hot enough, it should release, right?
It should. Grilling whole fish can be a little tricky.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like grilling polenta. I've never been that successful with grilling polenta.
Yeah, I haven't even tried that. You're better than me.
That goes good with rabbit, though, so write that down.
Yeah, it goes good with trout, man. A little trout and polenta. Okay, so grilled trout now, time of season, right? I mean, the beautiful weather's approaching. You're out there. It's trout season. Catch
well, we're
trout
on the edge of grilling time, but, too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I mean. So how would we prep up this fish? How do we get the flavor? What do we do? You don't marinate it as...
See, if I was at my sister's house in Connecticut, she'd probably pour like Italian dressing on it or something. But I would
McCormick's?
Go...
McCormick's?
But like, it's not a bad idea when you got like 15 children and no time to do anything. But
right.
A nice little chimichurri or a warm vinaigrette, stuff like that is something, you know, fresh with a little acidic tone to it, a balanced tone.
Yeah.
Is awesome.
Yeah, that's the thing.
The lemon, the garlic.
Thank you.
Some
acidity.
Capers, maybe.
The olive oil's great. Some red wine vinegar, something like that. Shallots.
And what do we serve this with? For me, it's always rice with trout.
Keep it simple. Some sautéed spinach, some asparagus.
Maybe some roasted potatoes.
Roasted potatoes.
Very nice.
My mom would have it simmered in the tomato sauce.
Of course. She would use olive oil to make the tomato sauce too, right?
Absolutely.
None of that, Jesse. Evil canola oil, huh?
Now, I know these guys, and I want you to get to know them a little bit. Jesse, she's fancy. I know she has something fancy. I know she does. Watch this.
No, for this I don't.
Really? All right, let's see what you think is not fancy. Let's hear this.
All right, so...
We catch a trout. Let's set
the tone. We
catch
a trout.
And
my preference is to eat the trout where it was caught.
Okay, we're camping on the side of the Delaware River. We're outside of Hancock,
and
New York.
My little travel bottle of extra virgin olive oil.
Right, we're not driving anywhere, so we're drinking bourbon.
Right.
We're doing a little fishing. We got the fire going.
I've packed some lemons in my backpack.
Right.
And a little jar of capers.
Right. Our wives are there yelling at us, you know, because they hate camping. They don't want to be outside.
Like that's never going to happen.
Right. Right. My wife's mad because I had too much bourbon, but we catch fish. Now what?
We catch fish. I would try to build a nice wood fire and have a nice, like a cast iron skillet.
Now we're talking. Now you're talking my language.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I'd put like a little nice olive oil, lemon caper thing on that fish after he comes off the grill.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay. There you go. What are we putting in the pan? Oil? Butter?
A little bit of oil, yeah.
Yeah. See, to me, that's how to do it. Nice cast iron. Get it nice and hot. Get some olive oil in it. You don't want the butter to burn. Even though it's a technique, you can, right, Jeff?
Mm-hmm.
The brown butter. But
butter's not going to work too good in the woods, though.
Yeah.
Why not? Why? We got a cooler. Oh. Where am I keeping all
my... Oh, we're fancy now. We got a cooler.
No, we got a cooler. We're not backwoods.
Who's going to carry the cooler, you or your wife?
No, I don't care. I got a bad back. I can't. My wife's got to get that out.
So it needs wheels.
That's why I have a wife and kids. They'll get the cooler out for me and everything. I got to set up the rods.
I can see if I brought my wife, she'd be out there like sweeping the trail. And
my wife too.
Making sure the grill is clean.
And you know what? I make fun of her. But I'm always like whenever I go camping, you know, I talk with my friends and they're like, let's go camping. Let's leave the wives. Yeah. Let's just bring the boys up. You know, my son. I'm always like, yeah. Sounds great. Let's do that. And then when I start planning to go camping, I'm like, oh, I need her. I got to talk her into going. We tricked her last year. I told her I rented a cabin.
Yeah, that's why she's never letting you plan vacation again.
I know. I told her I rented a cabin. She's like, and I'm like, it's going to be beautiful. It's on the side of the river. You're going to love it. But it was a shell. You know,
there was no indoor plumbing.
No indoor plumbing. We had a sink, actually, but no bathroom. There was, you know, we grilled outside, man. We were living off the land. We had a roof over our head. That was it. Which turns out, if you know anything about camping, it's actually how do you say it, more inconvenient for a non-camper to have a cabin because a lot of critters move into the cabin.
Well, also
that's
you expect
there.
Certain conveniences if you have a solid structure around you.
Right. And my
as
wife
opposed
got
to a tent.
There, and she was just like, are you kidding me? Oh, my God. That's why I remember her getting out of the car going, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Well, because if there's a tent, you don't expect a bathroom.
No, and then, well, then her thing was, you know, after the first night, she goes, we should have just brought tents. It would have been cleaner. And I know no animals are living in our tent. We had mice in the cabin that lived there, you know, and they were fine. And there were spiders and other things. But you know what? The whole thing, we caught fish. We were out there on the river living life. The kids loved it. But I needed my wife for, you know, crowd control with the kids. Cleanliness of the kids, you know, brush the teeth thing, you know.
And you created family memories.
I certainly did, and my wife hates me for it, and I don't know how. My plan's got to become more and more elaborate now to trick her into a camping trip, but hopefully I could do that.
Just tell her the truths.
I had never thought of that, Jeff. Maybe I should try that someday. The truth, huh? That's a noble idea. Listen, guys, thank you very much. Unfortunately,
yeah, thank you.
That's all the time we have. I'd like to thank Jack, and I already forgot the new guy's name again.
Edric.
Thank you. Welcome aboard. They did a great job producing and engineering today's show. As always, you can find archived episodes of The Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes as a podcast. Also, check us out on Facebook. And thewildgamedomain.com, which we haven't done a lot of work on, but our Facebook page is starting to pick up. So like us on Facebook. Look up Wild Game Domain on Facebook. And please call in if you have any questions or you want to talk to us live, 718-497-2128. Thank you very much. And remember, if you kill it, make sure you eat it. That's right. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.